Hello and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU provides each of our listeners with current information on a wide variety of topics related to health, athletic performance, fitness, and nutrition. On Track 1, Corey will provide his commentary adapted from the Certified Sports Nutrition Advisor Education Program, current research data, and his clinical experience. On Track 2, he will be joined by Tracy Hawley on He Said, She Said for her female focus on topics related to whole food, health, relationships, and raising healthy children. Track 3 features an interview with our special guest, who will share their expertise and experience in the healthcare, fitness, and sports nutrition field. Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Volume 6, Number 4. In the last edition of SNU, I talked about coffee and caffeine. In this edition, we'll examine the effects of what I consider to be the two most problematic recreational drugs. In terms of damage, negative effects on health, and impact on society, of course, I'm referring to tobacco and alcohol. And I think it's ironic that they are both legal in North America, and with some very rare exceptions, pretty much everywhere on the planet. Let's begin with tobacco. After aging and special commercial processing, it is the cured leaf of Nicotinana tobacum and Nicotinana rustic that is smoked, chewed, snuffed, and extracted for its nicotine content. Tobacco belongs to the Salicina species of the nightshade family. The Indians of Western North America used other subspecies for smoking, so there's definitely more than one species, and these included N. attenuata, N. trigonophilia, and N. quadrivalvus. So some pretty tongue-twisting Latin names there. But tobacco is tropical in origin, but today it is cultivated because of technology throughout the world. Now, nicotine is the principal psychoactive alkaloid in tobacco. It constitutes about 5% of the plant by weight. Nicotine is a physiologically addictive substance and displays a unique biphasic effect. This means that when it is inhaled in short puffs, it stimulates, but when smoked in deep drags, it tranquilizes. Interesting. Like the neurotransmitter acetylcholine, nicotine improves alertness, memory, and the capacity to learn. It also stimulates the release of norepinephrine and endorphins, which produces an opiate-like effect. For many smokers, this helps to balance their moods or calm their nerves. Nicotine has a desensitizing effect. It seems to reduce distraction from surrounding stimuli, both physically and emotionally. Nicotine stimulates both the central nervous system and the cardiovascular system. It constricts blood vessels, increases blood pressure, and stimulates the heart, all of which reduces oxygen supply. Although nicotine is toxic, it is the inhaled smoke from cigarettes that causes most of the damage. Carbon monoxide binds to hemoglobin and reduces the blood's ability to transport oxygen. This reduces lung function and maximal oxygen uptake. Close to 500,000 deaths in the U.S. each year are from smoking-related illnesses. In Canada, smoking is responsible for about one-third of what is called potential years of life lost, PYLL, due to cancer. About one-quarter of PYLL due to diseases of the heart, and about one-half due to respiratory disease. It's been said that a single cigarette shortens the life of each smoker by 14 minutes. Over a lifetime, that's about 6 to 8 years. As few as 15 puffs can cause significant increases in airway resistance. Cigarette smoke contains literally thousands of different chemicals, including carbon monoxide, hydrogen cyanide, nitrogen gases, oxides, heavy metals, pesticides, radioactive materials, acid aldehyde, you name it. It just keeps going on. The list is long. All of which are known to induce cancer, increase blood fats, damage the lungs, cause irritation and inflammation, and generate billions of, you guessed it, free radicals. Commercial cigarettes contain many additional additives not present in the traditional organic form. Dr. Elson Haas, MD, author of Staying Healthy with Nutrition, believes that based on historical observation and the rise in disease correlated with post-World War II tobacco use, it is the new commercial varieties and their so-called secret ingredients that are responsible for the impact smoking has on society. Smoking decreases life expectancy for all age groups and significantly increases risk of mortality from virtually all causes, a risk that increases the more one smokes and the longer one smokes. The risk of damage obviously goes up the longer you smoke and the more you smoke. Duh. Tobacco is significantly less destructive when it is smoked as a natural leaf, especially if it is grown organically, as it has been for centuries in different parts of the world. Since the tobacco industry began to chemically change tobacco through the incorporation of literally hundreds of different substances and chemicals, now proven to be associated with its increased addiction rate, cancer rates have escalated. So if you smoke, my advice is to buy organic tobacco and smoke that, and you could probably reduce the risks by like 80%. I mean, it's that significant of a difference. Sidestream or secondhand smoke is considered an environmental hazard as it is not filtered. It contains enough carbon monoxide to double your blood levels of this toxic gas and exposes non-smokers to many of the same carcinogens smokers inhale, but at higher concentrations. Sidestream cigarette smoke endangers the lives of infants and children and causes an estimated 3,000 cases of lung cancer in America each year. The so-called brown plague is clearly a threat to everyone's health. Few smokers are unaware of the serious potential consequences. The evidence is undeniable, and many therapists consider smoking more difficult to overcome than heroin addiction. So, why do people smoke? Is it because they don't believe the facts? Are they so unhappy that they secretly long for death? Is smoking a sucking phenomenon similar to breastfeeding, caused by childhood abandonment, abuse, or neglect? Or is it simply a case of commercial persuasion we can blame on the tobacco industry? Is it a coping mechanism that helps people endure the hardships of living, the struggle of life? Whatever the reason, smoking commercial tobacco is incongruent with healthy living. Few people can escape its enslavement, but it's never too late to try to beat the odds. According to Dennis Smith, PhD, head of the Adolescent Tobacco Use Awareness Program and Associate Professor of Health and Human Performance at the University of Houston, smoking less than 100 cigarettes can get you hooked. Science indicates it's easier for addicts to give up cocaine or heroin than nicotine. I mean, I said this before, but it's true. I mean, I got a whole concept about addiction that I'm going to go in detail on my final SNU regarding this topic, because I don't believe in addiction, and I'm going to explain why that's true. So I use the word lightly all through this dialogue, and it's often terminology that the medical profession incorporates or implies as if people have no control over their own behavior, which I don't agree with. Anyway, this guy named Dennis Smith, PhD, he believes it's impossible to reach a physical peak while using any tobacco product. So, you know, it gets in the way of health and performance and life. Here's another interesting fact. Smokers tend to eat more fat and salt than non-smokers. Why? Smoking tends to blunt or dull the taste of many foods. Thus, a desire is created to seek foods that possess stronger flavors. Well, that makes sense. Smoking tobacco remains a choice and a personal freedom. I don't believe in legislating personal behavior, provided such behavior does not compromise the health and rights of others. You know, maybe you've heard me say this before, but there's only one law that we need on the planet, and if everyone obeyed it, we would get along okay, and that is no harm. You're never allowed to harm anybody, including yourself. Well, my philosophy is live and let live. Besides, self-destructive behavior is impossible to eradicate or enforce through law. Obviously, we've got the laws, but we see people every day harming others and themselves. Objective science-based education is paramount, and so is setting a good example. But smoking is an effect, thus the cause must be identified. Most smokers, for example, are hypoglycemic. In my experience, once blood sugar is stabilized through good diet, exercise, and the strategic use of high-quality supplements, the desire to smoke is greatly reduced. My clinical strategy is to focus on the positive. Get them involved in positive, life-changing, healthy habits. Incorporate changes that heal and strengthen the mind and body. A few smokers need to be told that smoking is bad for them. I mean, come on, give me a break. Most people who smoke know that it's not good. So why do they do it? Well, you tell me. Personally, I don't smoke cigarettes, but smoking doesn't bother me, really in the least. I know that sounds kind of weird, but, you know, everyone's got their stuff going on. Some of my best friends and the world's greatest athletes smoke cigarettes. What are we to do? Banish them from society? Who gets to decide what is right or wrong for another person? Do you? Do you have the right to tell someone that they can't damage themselves? To condemn a smoker is to condemn yourself. You may not smoke, but there's definitely something about your own lifestyle or behavior that's less than ideal. Like maybe you eat junk food. You know, you sneak in the odd Hostess ding-dong, or, you know, you have a snack attack at night, or you do a drive-through with a hamburger. Now, who knows about that? You do. Maybe you miss workouts or whatever it is that you're doing or not doing. The behavior in similarity or in contrast, you know, when we grind out and down our own personal health to death, that's what we have in common with the smoker. So when you're pointing the fingers, remember there's three pointing back at you, like they say. Smokers are everywhere. They are our sons and daughters, our wives and husbands, our grandparents, the people that we love. Nagging and criticism will get you nowhere fast. In fact, you'll lose relationship if you keep doing it. So you have to ask yourself, do I want to have a relationship with this person I love who's a smoker? Or is it more important for me to be right? You decide. Successful counselors, clinicians, and therapists demonstrate a high degree of understanding and always reserve the final moral judgment to a power greater than their own. So whatever it is that you think that that power is, probably in the end, they're going to have the final say. So in the meantime, let's try and get along and understand and judge less and try and heal the mind, because that's where these behaviors originate from. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening. And here's a quote from H.L. Mencken, one of the most influential American writers of the early 20th century. The harsh, useful things of the world, from pulling teeth to digging potatoes, are best done by men who are as starkly sober as so many convicts in the death house. But the lovely and useless things, the charming and exhilarating things, are best done by men with, as the phrase is, a few sheets in the wind.